So we're on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Beis. And what we're trying to figure out here, which we started on Mem Aleph Amud Aleph on the bottom, is this concept called Shir, which means that in our Mishnah, which the Gemara quotes here, we want to bring a raya as to whether or not Shor Tam pays Chatzi Nezik as a Knas or as Mamon. And not only in our Mishnah, but a bunch of Mishnayos here, which can be interpreted one way or the other. For example, we have a Mishnah here, which the Gemara quotes at the bottom of Mem Aleph, and that's a Mishnah in Bava Kamma Daf Tes Zayin, that the only difference presumably between a Shor Tam and a Shor Muad is this din of Chatzi Nezik Migufo as opposed to Nezik Shalom and Aliyah, but no mention of the fact that Chatzi Nezik is a Knas, whereas Nezik Shalom is Mama, and then Afkavita is going to be Moda B'Knas is Potter. So the Gemara says, Shir, that this Tana, when he wrote the Mishnah, he didn't give us the exhaustive list of all the differences between Shor Tam and Shor Muad. He gave us a sampling. So the Gemara argues that you could only apply the principle of Shir, Tana B'Shir, if you find another clear-cut example of Shir. And the Gemara suggests that maybe that example would be Chatzi Kofer, which means the following, that there's a fundamental difference between a Shor Tam and a Shor Muad in the case where the Shor kills a human being. And the Torah goes out of its way to say and to emphasize that the Shor that killed a human being was a Shor HaMuad, which is called Shor Nagahu Mitmol Shilshon V'hu Ad Bibolov. Then he pays Kofer, excluding the case of Shor Tam. We would have thought that since Shor Tam, when it damages property or kills another animal, it pays Chatzi Nezek. If it kills a man, then you should be paying Chatzi Kofer. But this is going to be a difference between Shor Tam and Shor Muad, again, above and beyond the difference of Chatzi Nezek versus Nezek Sholem. That difference, once accepted, once admitted, should now impact on Kofer. We should say that just like in the case of a Shor Muad, you pay Nezek Sholem of Kofer, full Kofer, so too in the case of a Shor Tam, you should pay Chatzi Kofer. And yet, the Torah goes out of its way to exclude a Shor Tam from Chatzi Kofer. So you see already a precedent that the Mishnah omitted certain differences between, or at least this one difference between Shor Tam and Shor Muad, and likewise it left out this difference about Moda B'Knas or Moda B'Mama. So the Gemara rejects this, and the Gemara says that that's not a valid shiur, because the Tana, the Mishnah, again, if we want to maintain that it's giving us an exhaustive list, reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who holds, he maintains that Tam in fact does pay Chatzi Kofer. And the Gemara clarifies in Bava Kamma that Rabbi Yossi derives this from the pasuk Ubal Ashar Naki. And I'll read to you the Rashi here, or at least the summary of the Rashi here on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Beis, that this pasuk of Ubal Ashar Naki, according to Rabbi Yossi, addresses Chatzi Kofer. No, I'm sorry. That Rabbi Yossi rejects this drasha of Ubal Ashar Naki. Naki means that he doesn't have to pay. And according to the Chachamim, that's not Rabbi Yossi, this Bal Ashar Naki, which exempts the Bailim, the owner of the Shar, from paying, is a reference to a Shar that killed a human being, and the Baal does not have to pay Chatzi Kofer. That's not Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that in the case of a Shor Shenogach Isha Hara, the Hipilis Vloroseha, and the question is whether you pay Kofer on the Vlados. So in this case, the Shor knocked out the fetus or the embryo. And the question is, as a result of the death of the embryo, does the owner of the shor have to pay damages, which in this case would be kofer, but since it's a short time, you'd pay chatzi kofer. Says Rabbi Yossi, that's the exclusion of a bala sharnaki. That's a din with regard to kofer for vlados. But in the case of kofer for harigas adam, indeed, Rabbi Yossi maintains that you would be chayev in the case of a short time. You would be chayev chatzi kofer. So we don't have really a precedent here for ton of a shear, which means that at this point the Gemara seems to be rejecting the shita of knas of palgadiniska knasa, which was the shita of Rav Huna. Why? Because if you maintain palgadiniska knasa, then that means that moda bechatzi nezek of shartam is potur, and that should have been listed in the Mishnah on Dafte in Bamkama Tezayin as one of the differences between Shartam and Sharmur. Why was it omitted? And don't tell me that it was omitted because of the principle of Tana Mashir, because you have no precedent for Tana Mashir, because that Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. And Rabbi Yossi Haglili maintains that a Shartam, in fact, does pay Chatzi Kofer. Mm-hmm. Now, here there's a very important point in Tosfos. It doesn't appear on this Amud. It actually is printed here at the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, Dibra Maskel Imishum Kofer. And Tosfos wants to point out that the Gemara does not mean to leave us with a kasha here, according to the Mandi Odom Palgadiniska Knossa. Because if you hold Palgadiniska Knossa, you can certainly maintain that this Mishnah does not reflect the Shita of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, that this Mishnah that omits the difference between Kofer Chatzi Kofer reflects the Shita of the Chachamim. And if it reflects the Shita of the Chachamim, who maintain that a Shor Tam does not pay Chatzi Kofer, then we already have a principle here of Tana Vashir. So again, if I maintain that Palgadin Iska Knossa, then I'm going to be forced, my arm will be twisted here, to interpret that this Mishnah reflects the Shita of the Chachamim, and hence we have Tana Vashir. Why? Because the Chachamim hold that a short time does not pay Chatzi Kofer, and therefore it should have been listed in the Mishnah. What the Gemara is pointing out is that don't establish for sure that the principle of Tana Vashir. For example, let's say I hold like Rav Papa that Palga de Nizka is Mamona, and my proof is going to be from the fact that this Mishnah did not mention the difference of Chatzi Kofer. So you'll say, well, Tana Vashir, so that Mandiyomer, meaning Rav Papa in this case, who holds Palga de Nizka Mamona, he's going to say, well, this Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and therefore we don't have ton of a shear. And if we don't have ton of a shear, then we have a clear-cut proof that Palgan and Iska Mamona, because otherwise the difference of Modu Viknas should have been mentioned. So let me just summarize the mathematics here. Mm-hmm. This Mishnah that omits mentioning Modu Viknas as a difference between Nezik Shalom of a Sharmur and Chatzi Nezik of a Shartam, this Mishnah can be understood in one of two ways. If I hold Palgad and Iska Mamona, then the Mishnah made a deliberate, and in fact it didn't even have a choice, omission of Hodas Baldin. Why? Hodas Baldin is not a difference between Shartam and Shartamu, because I maintain that Palgad and Iska is Mamona.
Right.
Oh, but you'll ask me, Well, maybe the Mishnah omitted that difference, even though the Mishnah holds Palgad Nizka Knossa, because of the principle of Tana Vashir. So the Mandiyomer who says Palgad Nizka Mamona will counter argue, and he says there's no Tana Vashir over here, because this Mishnah reflects the Shita of the Chachamim of Rabbi Yossi, namely that, that this Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. I get mixed up in the mathematics of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, that even a short time pays Chatzi Kofer. So there's no Tana Vashir here. If there's no Tana Vashir, then we understand that this Mishnah must be reflecting the Shita of the Palgad and Iska Mamona. On the other hand, if you hold Paskin Iska Knossa, then you're gonna argue that this Mishnah was authored by the Chachamim, and the Chachamim hold, I'm going quite to Madi Omer now, Paskin Iska Knossa, right? So this Mishnah reflects the Shita of the Chachamim, and the Chachamim maintain that there's no chiyuv of chatzikof in the case of shartam. Hence, this Mishnah must be predicated on the principle of tana v'shir. If it's predicated on tana v'shir, I understand why moda v'knas was omitted from this Mishnah, because that's called tana v'shir. So at the end of the day, the Gemara doesn't come to any clear-cut proof one way or the other, because whether the Mishnah is so to speak guilty of omitting, of deliberately omitting Hodas Baldin, would really depend upon whether the Mishnah reflects the Chachamim, which would be in Tana V'Shir, or reflects Rabbi Yossi Aglieli, and there's no Tana V'Shir. So if my vested interest is to assume that there's no Tana V'Shir, and that would reflect the Shita Palgan Iska Mamona, then I'm going to attribute the authorship of this Mishnah to Rabbi Yossi Aglieli, and hence there's no Tana V'Shir. If on the other hand I maintain Palgan Iska Mamona, and maintain Palgan Iska Knos, and if I desperately need to press to activate the button of Tana V'Shir, then I'm going to assume that the Mishnah reflects the Shita of the Chachamim and Tana V'Shir as far as Chatzi Kofar is concerned. So for today, we're going to start on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis, two lines down from the top, and we're up to Toshma. Now we go to our Mishnah, which is here on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Aleph, and the Mishnah says that if a man admits, he confesses that Hamish Shori Es Ploni, that Mishar killed so and so, and therefore I'm chayv to pay kofar. Oh, alternatively, Shoro Shel Ploni, or Mishar killed the Shor of Ploni, HaRezeh Mishalim Al Pi Atzma. We're going to assume that Kufra Mamona. You may recall that we once discussed in the past the Machlokas with the Kufra Kapara or Kufra Mamona. In other words, what's the nature of the payment for a Shor that killed a person? Is that payment a compensation? Of course, it's not given to the dead person, he's gone, but it's paid over to his heirs, and that's called Kufra Mamona. Or no, it's not compensation at all. It's a kapara. It's a way in which a person, so to speak, is redeeming himself because he, insofar as he was negligent on watching his Shor, he caused the death of somebody, and he should really be killed for that. But the Torah gave him an ability to redeem himself. That's called Kufra Kapara. And the Nafkamina is going to be Moda, in the case of Hodah. Would Hodah Spaldin operate in the case of Kofar? It would depend. If it's Kufra Kapara, the answer is no. There's no Hodah Spaldin. But if you hold Kufra Mamona, then like any other moment, we have a principle of Hodah Spaldin. So this Mishnah reflects the Shita of Kufra Mamona. So whether or not a person admits that his shor killed someone, a human being, or it killed someone's animal, in both cases, Hodas Baldin operates, and he has to pay al pi atzmo based on his own admission. Now notice that the Mishnah doesn't qualify what kind of a shor we're talking about. And if it's unqualified, that's exactly what it is. It's unqualified. My love, why don't we assume, even in the case of a tam, a short tam, not only in the case of a mu'ad, and if a person confesses that my shor killed so-and-so shor, my shor is a shor tam, the shor mazik is a shor tam, then based on his confession, he has to pay chatzi nezek. And this would prove the shita of a papa that chat palgan and iska mamona. Love, the Gemara says, no, b'mu'ad, that this Mishnah is specifically talking about a shor mu'ad, and therefore Hodas Baldin operates. Had it been a shor tam, his hodah would not be effective because it would be moda b'knas, because palgan and iska knas.
Actually, it's not a conclusive proof. It's just saying that you're not a proof, because I could just say it's mu'ad.
Correct. Okay. That if this Mishnah is discussing a case of a shor mu'ad, then In the case of a short tam, it could be that the Mishnah holds, we don't know for sure, but the Mishnah might hold the palgan it is kaknasa, and therefore there's no we don't rely or we don't believe his hodah to be mechayev him in a case of a knas, because modu b'knas is potter. So that's the assumption now that this Mishnah is addressing the case of a shor muad. Oh, so the Gemara asks the following kash. Avol betam. What are you telling me now? That in the case of a shor tam, he would not be believed if he claims, hey, Miss Shori, my shor is a shor tam, es shor o shor plon, he would not have to pay chatzi nezek because of the principle of palgad and iska knosa. So then what does the Mishnah mean when it says Adetoni Sefer Avdo Shalploni? If the owner of the shor confesses that his shor killed an Eved, in which case the Torah imposes upon him a knas of Shloshim Shkolim, and that's a Domesheish L'Kitzvah, it's set, which means clearly it's a knas. Is Eino Mishalim Al Piatzma, the Mishnah says in such a case, his confession is not valid, it's not binding. Is Niflog V'Nisne B'Dida. This is a typical methodology of the Gemara, that why do you have to stretch your arm out if you want to get a contrast to another case? In the very case that you're talking about, where the confession was that his shor killed another person's shor, you can make a difference between whether we rely on his confession or we don't. And it should have said the following, but medvam, when do we say that we rely on his confession? He has to pay the nizak. That's only b'muah. That's only in the case of a shor muah, because in such a case we're talking about a chiyuv mamah. He's compensating him for the loss. Abul tam. We're holding now that palgan and iska knosas eino mishalim al pi atzmo. So why did the Mishnah, in contrasting the ratio where he does have to pay based on his confession, and the sefer where we do not rely on his confession, it's not valid, why does it have to go from the case of my shor killing your shor to a case of my shor killing your Evan? Why not stick to your original guns? You know, stay within the original territory. Your shor, you admit that your shor killed my shor, but instead of your shor being a shor muad, in this case, the sefer would have been a shor tam, and a shor tam, if you hold palgan and iska knosa, you would not pay based on your own confession. So why did the Mishnah have to mention the case of ploni of shori harag avdo shel ploni? So the Gemara answers, kula b'muad kamayri. The Tana, see, we have in a sense a conflict in terms of the literary rules of how you write a Mishnah. One literary rule is called liflog v'lisni v'didah, which means that you stick to the very same case and you just make a distinction. The other rule that also governs how you write a Mishnah and how you author a Mishnah is don't change the facts on the ground. You know, a Mishnah should maintain, there should be an integrity in which the facts on the ground are always the same. What do I mean? On the one hand, if our goal is to tell you whether he's believed or not based on his hodah, then we can differentiate between the case of a shor muad and the case of a shor tam. And again, I'm defending the man Yomer who says palgan and iska knasa. And now we have a beautiful contrast. When do we rely on hodah spaldin? In a case of a shor muad, because that's momo. When do we not rely on a shor, on his hodah spaldin? That's in the case of a shor tam, which is knasa. That's called liflog lisnida. But now we have a counter element, another consideration in how to write the Mishnah. That is bikula kamayri. Bikula kamayri means there should be a very strong common denominator or common case between the ratio of the Mishnah and the sefer of the Mishnah. And this Mishnah is dedicated to the laws of a shor tam. What are the laws of a shor? I'm sorry. To dedicate to the laws of a shor muad. What are the laws of hodah in a case of a shor muad? In other words, Ploni is the owner, a proud owner of a shor muad. What will be the various scenarios in which he would either have to pay based on his hodah, or would not have to pay in the case of his hodah. So the topic, the koteret here, the heading of this Mishnah is sharmuad in terms of hodah spaldin. If a man is the proud owner of a sharmuad, is his hodah spaldin reliable and effective, valid, or is it not? And that's going to be the difference between the case where the shar killed another shar as opposed to the shar killing an Evan. Let me say that a little bit. The conscience is going to be between a shark killing another shark by his own admission, or killing a human being by his own admission, because we're going now with the Mani Yom Lekuf from Hamona, as opposed to the case of my shark killed your Evan, which is Knas. So we're sticking to the guns of Muad. Because again, in the case of Shari Harag as Avdo Shalploni, there's no chiv to pay knas unless it was a Shar Muad. So we're sticking to the realm of Shar Muad. And what we're forfeiting here is the Liflog Velisnida to talk about the case of Shar Tam. We're not going to discuss the case of Shar Tam, although that would be a perfect distinction between the validity or the invalid hodah spaldin, because again we're going to the yom knasa paganiska knasa for the sake of maintaining this integrity that the subject of this mishnah is shar hamuad with regard to hodah spaldin. So now we make the distinction between mamon and knas. So in the reisha, his hodah is valid and reliable. He has to pay based on his hodah with the sharmuad because he's talking about mamon. Either he killed another shar, he killed a human being. And the sefer is talking about a case of sharmuad le'inyan knas, which is a shloshim shel eved, when he confesses that his shar killed an eved. And there, we're not going to rely on his confession because modav knas is potter. So you have nothing to prove here from the liflog velisni bedida, meaning the argument was that if you maintain shar, that palgadiniska in the case of shar tam is knasa, that would have been a perfect case to fit the needs of the Mishnah to contrast the ratio where we do believe his hodah and the sefer where we don't rely on his hodah. That would have been a shift from shar tam, from shar mua to shar tam in that sequence. And that would have been a great distinction. That's called liflog velisni bedida. And the fact that the Mishnah omitted that would seem to indicate that the Mishnah maintains the palgadin iska mamona. The answer is nay. The Mishnah maintains the palgadin iska knasa. And if you'll ask why didn't the Mishnah give that distinction, you know, you're looking for that which torpedoes or undermines the hodas baldin, and you could have easily quoted the case of the knas in the case of shartam. The answer is bemur kamayim, that the subject of this Mishnah is a sharmur. Toshma, here's another raya from the Mishnah that we had before on Mem of an Aleph. Mem Aleph Amin Aleph, excuse me. And Zeh Klal, Kol Sheh Mishalim Yeser Al Mashe Hizik, Eino Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo. Do you remember that after the Mishnah gives us the whole Shaka Vitari, you know, many different bubbles in which, in the case of Knas, you're not believed based on your own door, then the Mishnah ends up with, for now, a Zeh Klal, an overall rule, a rule of thumb. And the Mishnah now is defining Knas. And therefore, Eino Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo. What is a knas? How does the Mishnah define a knas? Kol Mishalim Yeser Al Mashe Hizik. So he's paying above and beyond the nezek, and that's called a knas. And therefore, Eino Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo, because modu b'knas potter. Now, according to you, and this would be Rav Huna in this case, that Palgan and Nizka Vishar Tam is Knas, then the Mishnah's definition of Knas is really an imprecise definition. It's not Kol HaMishalim Yeser Al Mashehizik. It would really mean, even in a case we pay less than the Nezik. And therefore, what the Mishnah should have said is that when is he believed with his Hodah Spaltin, that's when he pays Kamosha Hizik, exactly as he damaged it. But if he's not paying Kamosha Hizik, which would mean either he's paying more than his Hizik or less than his Hizik, then Eino Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo is a Knas. But from the fact that the Mishnah limits the definition of Knas to Yeser Al Mashe Hizik, The implication is pachos mimasha izik mishalav al piatzmo. Pachos mimasha izik is a mamon and not a knas. So how are we going to defend the man diomar who holds palgad in iska knasa? And the Gemara answers, no, lo temahav pachos mimasha izik. Don't make your dig that the Mishnah is coming to imply that if it was less than the amount that he damaged, it's considered mama or no. Ela'enu, we should say, ha'kama shehizik mishalam al piatzmo. What the Mishnah meant to say was that if he's paying exactly what he damaged, then he's paying mama, and therefore we rely on his odah. But if it's different, if there's some discrepancy, whether it's this way or that way, whether he's paying more or less, then enu mishalam al piatzmo tzeknas. Yeah, there's only one problem. That's not what it says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't say Kamasha Hizik. That's what the Gemara is now going to attack. Avo pachos mai enu mishalam al piatzmo. If you're telling me that even in a case where he pays less than the Hizik, that's called a Knas, and therefore mode of a Knas is put to listening, the language appropriate for the Mishnah would have been Zaklal kol she'eno mishalim Kamasha Hizik. When is it called a Knas? When it's not exactly commensurate to the amount of damage that the nizak suffered, is any mishal ma'piatzmo? Then it's a knas. The mashba pachos or mashba yeser. That language would have certainly clarified that whether he's paying more or less than the amount of hizik, then it's knas and any mishal ma'piatzmo tiufta. And the Gemara ends up with a question. Now it's very interesting because whenever you see the word tiufta in the Gemara, it seems to imply what we call in Yiddish an upschlag. Upschlag means that's it, finito, you know, pack your bags, and a TKO. There's another language sometimes, the Gemara says kasha. Kasha means have a kasha. So find an answer. You know, I'm not going to give you an answer. You'll rack your brains and find an answer. But tiuvta, that's like, you know, you're out of the game. But look at the next line in the Gemara. The hilchasa, palgad and iska knasa. So the same breath, which obviously the Gemara is going to object to, I'm just giving you a preview of coming attractions. In the same breath, the Gemara says we have an absolute TKO, a knockout question from a Mishnah against Rav Huna's position of Palgad and Iska Knasa, because otherwise, why didn't the Mishnah say that he only pays based on his Odah in the case of Kisha Mishal and Kemosha Hizik? And we never found a resolution to that. And we were not successful in defending the Man D'Omer, Palgad and Iska Knasa. And yet, in the same breath, he says, Ve'ilchasa, the final maskon is Palgad and Iska Knasa, which would mean that Eino Mishalam al Piatzmo. So the Gemara asks, Tiuvta Ve'ilchasa? In the same breath, you say a Tiuvta, and you say a Hilchasa. And the Gemara says, In Eino Chinami, we're going to paskin like the Man D'Omer who holds Palgad and Iska Knasa, even though we have a question from the Mishnah.
Not just a question.
And a strong question, right? Tiufta. And time of my isosiv. Isosiv is like the verb of tiufta. The noun is tiufta, and the verb is isosiv. And that's what was the question from the Mishnah? Mishum delo katani, it should have said, kemosha hizik. In other words, when do you pay al piatzmo with your odah? It's because the payment is commensurate to the loss. So the answer is, the Mishnah didn't want to use that language. Delop sikale. Oh, this is another principle in the literary rules that govern how you write a Mishnah. Lop sikale means that what we need is psikale. We need psikale. In this case, we have to avoid this because it's lop sikale. What's psikale? Psikale means that if the Mishnah wants to make a statement and not qualify it, then it has to apply in every single case. So if the Mishnah would have said that if you pay less than the amount of damage, then we are not going to rely on your hodah, because that makes it ipso facto into a knas, which would be fine if you're talking about chatzi nezek of a shor tam, in a case where the shor jumps on another shor and gores it and beats it up with a direct hezek, and in such a case we're holding now hilchasa palgad iska knasa. So since he's paying less than the hezek, he's only paying chatzi nezek, that makes it into a knas, and we don't believe him, and we don't paskin based on his confession. Well, that's lop sikah. That's not always true. I'm going to give you a case of a shor tam who pays chatzi nezek, and yet he pays al pi atzmo. meaning that even though he's paying less than the damage, he's nevertheless paying mamon. He's not paying knas. And what's that called? Came in the ikah chatzi nezek tsroros. In other words, I'll explain this in a minute, but it means basically that the animal did not damage someone else's animal directly, but rather indirectly. That's called tsroros. We'll explain in a minute what that means. The hilchas agmirale, the entire enterprise of what's called chatzi nezek tsroros, is a halacha l'moshe misinai, meaning it doesn't appear anywhere in Torah Shemichsav. This was given over to Moshe at Har Sinai v'Torah Sheval Peh, and along with the halacha of chatzi nezek tsroros, that you have to pay half the nezek, in this case of tsroros, it's the Mamona who, that was also given over to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was like a, you know, it was a levi, it was an escort. In other words, there were two principles that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. One was called chatzi nezek tsroros, meaning that he pays chatzi nezek in the case of tsroros. And number two, that it's mama, that he pays b'toras mama, not b'toras knas. And therefore he pays al piatzmo with his own odah. Is mishum hachilo katani. The Mishnah deliberately avoided using the language of kamasha hizik, which would have implied that in all cases that he's paying less than kamasha hizik, he's not believed based on his odah because it becomes knas. The Mishnah couldn't afford that would be a dangerous formulation because it would lead the reader to a misunderstanding that in the case of chatzi nezek it would be knas because he's paying less than the hezek, when in fact the hilchos gemira establishes that it's mama. So let's spend a minute just talking about tsroros. Tsroros means that as the animal is walking, it kicks up pebbles, and these pebbles that come from its feet, that shoot off from the feet, break someone else's vessels, for example. So it's not a direct hezek of negifo or negicho, where the animal, you know, what do they call it in hockey? What's it called? A body check? No,
yeah, yeah.
There's a word for it. Anyway, you know, it's not where you hit, where the animal hits the other animal with its body, but rather the animal sends out pebbles. It's what shoots out something. That's called in the classic definition or categorization in the Zika, that's called grum. Grum means an indirect hezek. Now, again, if we had time, and we were learning the Sechta Bava Kama, which again, if you want to put that as a candidate for next year, but then we would have to get into the difference between what's called Koch Rishon and Grum. So usually when you shoot at pebbles, that's not exactly Grum. Like Grum would be if you shot at pebbles and they took a turn downwards and hit somebody. But in a direct line, when you throw something at someone, that's called Kocho, otherwise known as Isho Mishum Chitzav. So in that case, we have something that is in Tsroros, we really have something that's sort of midway between Negicha, which is direct with the body of the animal, and a Grumma situation.
Now, so far, the Pesach Din that Chetzi Nazik Knas, in the case of a shore killing another shore, okay?
Yeah.
Shore killing another shore. We haven't actually prove that's the case. All we've done is diffuse the counter arguments.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Right. But the Gemara comes to the conclusion that Hilchus Palganitzka Knossa. Now, you can always ask me what motivated the Gemara to come to that conclusion. And that we'd have to see in the Rishonim and if they grapple with that question. But, you know, it's rare, but sometimes the Gemara gives an absolute hilchus, a final conclusion in terms of what we call normative law, normative halacha. Mm-hmm. And here's one of those cases where, so for example, if somebody has a short time and he would admit that his short time, you know, damaged someone, he would not pay based on that odor.
But we don't have any base, I mean, other than just an opinion, we have no basis for
why. Don't know where the Gemara was coming from. What led the Gemara to that conclusion? Is it that Rav Huna against Rav Papa is halachic Rav Huna? Is that the rule of thumb? Is it that most of the Mishnai seem to assume Palganiska Knasa? We can defend the Mandiyama Palganiska Mamona? We don't know. And that's something that the Rishonim are going to have to grapple with. Okay? Now, what are the implications of the final conclusion, Hilchasa, that Palgan and Iska Knos? So we know one conclusion is, one repercussion is that if he's Moda, we don't accept his Hodah. But the Gemara says there's a much more far-reaching conclusion. And just by way of introduction, knas requires what's called a bezdin shel smuchin. And this is derived at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, which I happen to be teaching now, and that'll start at 8:30 today, from the Pasuk Elohim, 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 three times in the parasha of Mishpatim, it says Elohim. And the Gemara says that Elohim is a reference to judges, but not just any judge, but a judge that has an unbroken smicha that dates back to Moshe Rabbeinu.
Which doesn't exist today.
Oh, so the problem is, how are we going to impose a knas? Let's say, for example, we have a court case of a shartam,
mm-hmm.
and now we paskin that shartam is palgin nizka knasa. And we have a principle for knas, you must have a bezin shel smuchin. So if I sue you for a loan, let's say you owe me a debt because you borrowed $1,000, you never repaid me, then I can go to a bezin shel idiotis. I don't need a bezin shel smuchin. But if I'm going to sue you now for a knas, let's say shloshim shel eved or onus of a fata, what are we going to do? Now the story gets even more complicated, because even at the time that there was smicha, and there were what we call smuchim, those are synonymous terms, that only applied in Eretz Yisrael. But outside the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have smuchim at that particular time. So already at the time of the Gemara, we have a principle called Ein Govim Knossos B'Bavel. Bavel is representative of the whole world minus Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara points out, Vahashtam now, the Amit, whether we've come to the conclusion that Palgin and Iska Knossa, okay, Hai Kalba di Ochel Imri, was Shunra di Ochel Tanagoli Ravravi, okay, we'll go through all these cases in a minute, Mishunahu. And therefore, if it's Mishunah, becomes what's called Keren Mishunah. Keren Mishunah is the same as Shartav. And lo makbinin bebavel, we cannot force the collection in bavel.
Mishunah means not unusual case,
correct.
And therefore it's like a short time.
Right.
Okay.
Since it's a mishunah case, then it comes under what's called keren. There are four avos nezikim.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, if one animal devours another animal, that comes under what's called shein. And Shane is mama. You would be able to sue for damages even in Bavel in the absence of smuchim for Shane. But this is not Shane, because Shane is when an animal eats something normally. There's no element of belligerence or some sort of an unusual, psychological aberration. But here, the dog ate a tle. Tle, I think, is in English is a goat.
It says sheep.
A sheep. Sheep, okay, sheep. So imagine a dog eating sheep. And it's so unusual for that to happen. That's not the way it works in the out there in the law of the jungle. Or Shudra, we're talking about a cat now, that devours a hen or a chicken. Ravravi means a large one. Again, maybe if it's a very small one, so you could have a large cat eating a small chicken. But in the case of a large chicken and a regular sized cat, that's unusual. And that's called Mishunah. Now, the law of Mishunah is that we take something that would normally be Shane or Regal, and we transfer it over to a different category, and it becomes Karen. Now, if assuming that this dog had not proven himself on three occasions or more to eat up a sheep or this cat eating up a large chicken, then it becomes a Karen Tam, what we call a Karen Tam, right? Because we're within the first three times that it acted in that way. So therefore, we have a Chatzi Nezek situation, and now we've assumed that a Chatzi Nezek is a Knas, because Hilchasa Palgun Nizka Knas is Lo Magbin and Bibavu. Right? We don't have Dayonim Mumchem, we have Smicha Ish Mipi Ish, that go back to the Bezna Gol Shav Yerushalayim, that we only have in Eretz Yisrael. And with regard to a Knas, the Torah says, Asher Yashion Elohim, which requires Mumchem. And therefore, we're not going to be able to force the payment of this nezek, because this nezek and the payment thereof is knas. Now we'll soon see that the ball game is not over. You know, I'm worried about the owner of the sheep, or the, you know, the victim here of the nezek, or the owner of the chicken. We'll see that it's not all curtains, but that you have to wait another minute. First, the Gemara wants to say that, you know what, there are situations in which a cat will devour a chicken. That's called Avos Zutri. Zutri means smaller ones. Orchehu. And if it's Orche, it's normal, it's something that we can anticipate, then it becomes a told of shame. It's a case of shame. Shame pays Nezek Shalem, and it's not called a Knas, it's called Mamon. Umag Binoi. And we'll collect it even in Bava. So again, if a case came where somebody is suing someone for damages, in a case where he's saying that your cat ate my chicken, so the question in Bava would be, well, what was the size of the chicken? And maybe what was the size of the cat? You know, we have to finally determine, you know, maybe we should go to the zoologist and try to figure out if this is normal behavior or it's unnormal. Because if it's within the realm of normalcy, then it comes under shame. If it's abnormal, then it comes under Karen. And if it's Karen, it's Chatzi Nezek of a Shartam, which is Knossa, and Lo Magdin and Knossa Vibova. Oh. But what I said to you before, now we're ready for this. Is the ball game over? Let's say, in the case of Meshuna, or in the case of a Shartam in general, what is the situation of the victim who suffered this loss, and he is in Bava? So the Gemara says something amazing here. V'itofas Lo mafkina mine. Are you familiar with this? This is a principle that appears very, very often in Ezekiel, which is otherwise known as tfisa. If I could translate tfisa, not literally, but figuratively, it would be the idiom of possession, of taking the law into your own hands.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Right.
Well, no, those are two different things.
Yeah.
Okay, but in this case, there's an overlap between the two. But really, it means taking the law into your own hands. Literally into your own hands.
Oh, and so in other words, somebody's cat eats my large chicken, and I steal the price of the chicken from him. Like that?
Correct.
Okay.
And
price of the chicken, or I mean, does it matter? I mean, can you take... You can go into the house and take anything, or do you?
It seems like anything. It seems like you can take anything. In other words, you go into his possession and you grab something. You know, he has a beautiful vase. You know, you grab hold of his vase, and this has to do with the sugya in Masechta Bava Kama called Ovid Idish Dina Lenafshe. Are you familiar with that? Meaning that you can take the law into your own hands. There's machlokas whether actually you could do such a thing.
What if we take more? What if we take something that's worth more than the damage done?
Right. So then, in such a case, it could be that the mazik could sue the nizak, but the bezdin will only get involved on the increment. In other words, they'll come to the conclusion that the nezek, or in this case, chatzi nezek, was 100, and he took a vase that was worth 200, and he can force them to cough up the difference of 100. But the original 100, he tafas lo mafkin, we can't take it out of his hands. Now, basically, what this means, Rabbi Hussai, is unbelievable. It means that even in the case of a knas, even in Bavel, he owes him the knas. It's not that the Torah says that you're potter because you did this thing. You know, you were guilty of hezek in chutz lartz with no smuchim. You know, mm-hmm. Does the fact that there are no dayan and mumchim, does that in any way reduce the guilt or the negligence here that he should not be paying? The answer is that we can't force him to pay. Bezdin's arms are tied because we don't have the authority of a Bezdin shel mumchim to collect that money. But on the other hand, if he collects that which is due, is rightfully due to him, he took the law in his own hands. Once again, we have to be passive. We can't force him to cough it up. In other words, we don't see this as an act of gzela, where Bez is in charge of lahatzil is oshek miyoshko, and to make sure that the thief coughs up what he stole, because here he has all the rights to take what he took, and that's called itofas lo mafkina mine. The famous case of Tafas Lo Mafkina Mine is the case of a Safek Bechor. This is a Gemara Bav Metzia Daf Vav. The Shach wrote an entire book on this one sugi in the Gemara, where my animal gave birth to an animal, and we're not sure if it's bechor or not, because the previous birth was a stillbirth, and the question was, it reached, you know, a stage of being vital or not. In any event, the kohen comes along and says, well, I want that bechor. It belongs to me. And I say, I'm not willing to give you this bechor, because maybe it's not a bechor. And then the kohen went ahead and grabbed it. And the question is whether we can force the kohen to cough it up and return it. So there also, the Gemara applies the principle of itofas lo mafkidim. It's called
tofas. That's different, because there's a real suffek if it belongs right to the kohen.
Here, I think what the Gemara is saying is that vada he owes him this money, just we don't have the ability to force that, to enforce that. V'i Omar, if he says to Beis Din, Aku li zimna li Eretz Yisrael, here's another fallback position on behalf of the Nizak. So he didn't grab at anything in this case, but he says to Beis Din, you know what? You are here in Chutzlots in Bavel, and you don't have the power to give me what I deserve to get. So at least what I can demand of you is that you send a document, you know, send an email, you know, to the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, and make sure that the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael sets a date for my case, because I want to sue this mazik in the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael, where they have smuchim and they have the authority to impose a chiv knas. So I'm asking you, as the Beis Din here in Chutz Laretz, to set up a kvius, to set up an appointment for me in the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, so that the mazik will now be forced. I mean, now the mazik has a choice. Once the time is set for the judgment, then the mazik is in the following choice situation. He could either decide to go to Eretz Yisrael and show up in the court and see if he can somehow plead his case, or the case will be judged in his absence, because we have a right to subpoena him to the court of Eretz Yisrael.
They can only do this at a time when there are courts with based in smoking in Eretz Yisrael.
Correct. Yeah, otherwise it's a
game.
Right. This is the historical period in which there was smoking in Eretz Yisrael. So Makbi'in and Lay, based on this demand of the Nizah, Beis Din will in fact set up a time in Eretz Yisrael. They'll be in touch with the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, you know, send a message with a bird, you know, that flies to Eretz Yisrael. The Elo Azil. And if the mazik refuses to show up, you know, because he says it's not, you know, I'm not getting on a boat, you know, slow boat to Eretz Yisrael, so not only will the case be judged in his absence, but it's even worse than that. Mishamtinale, we view it as contempt of court. Do you follow? Because he's obligated to show up in that court. The court in Eretz Yisrael now, as the extended arm of the court in Bavel, is now subpoenaing him to show up. If he doesn't show up, then...
Oh, this is like a...
This is called nidui.
Yeah. What's the other? It's like a harem.
Yeah, it's not exactly a harem, but you know, again, if we were learning Masech Derech or other Masechtas and Shas, but it's a low case harem. You know, harem is very heavy, but it's a nidui. It's called nidui. Mm-hmm. Nidui is whenever you insult a Talmid Chacham. We'll just take another minute, and we'll say Hadron Aleph Eilu Naris, and tomorrow I want to start with you the next parak, only for one blot, because it really is it says Benkach uBenkach, whether or not the Masik agrees to go to Eretz Yisrael or not, nevertheless Mishamtinole, we will put him into Nidi for another reason, not because he refuses to go to Eretz Yisrael, he's willing to take the next boat to Eretz Yisrael, but the Amrinole Salek has Hezakech. He's a koch. In other words, you're owning an animal here, and we've seen that the animal is acting in a very strange way. That makes it a dangerous animal. And again, even though it hasn't proven itself three times, so technically it's not a shar muad, or we'll call it a kelev muad, or a shunra de muad, but nevertheless, you know, shunras that go around eating up big, large chickens, and dogs that start attacking sheep, you don't want to mess around with that. Get rid of it. Which means shecht it, or you can't eat it. In these cases, it's a bein tmeah. But what I mean to say is you know, put it to sleep, as we say. Why? Mid Rav Nosson, this is the famous principle of Rav Nosson, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, quoted at the end of the first parak of Bava Kama. Tesan Rav Nosson Omer, Minayin Shel Yigadol Odom Kelev Rav Besof Beso, V'lo Yamitzulim Ra'ua Besof Beso, Shenemar, I'll read the whole pasuk. Yosiso Ma'akel Gagecha V'lo Tassin Dov Vesecha. So you're not allowed to hold on to something that's dangerous. For example, you have a rabid dog in your house, which might come to Shvichas Domim. You might have a sulam, a ladder which is very shaky. Somebody might fall from the ladder and die. And the Torah says, L'tosim Domim Vesechu. So get rid of these objects that are dangerous.
Now, it says Mashtinim Le, that means if he refuses.
Correct.
Obviously, if he agrees, then they're not
going to... Right, right. We're using nidui as a powerful force to get a person to comply with the law.
Mm-hmm.
Would you use this... You'd say you have to get rid of the dog, but would they use this also to force him to pay the damages? This sounds like this is just to get rid of the dog.
No.
But they're not going to use it to force him to pay damages.
In Eretz Yisrael, they'll just confiscate his property. If they come to a conclusion in Israel... that he has to pay, then we go for the regular, you know, what's called the Yordim and the Chosim.
Even though it's Knas.
Yeah, because in Eretz Yisrael they have Smuch.
No, I'm saying, but well, what about today in Eretz? In other words,
today, again, I'm not opening up the Shulchan Aruch, but obviously you would have to look it up in Shulchan Aruch, but today the most we can do with him is we can put him into need.
Also, in Bubba, what they're saying here, though, what they put him into need, do we to force him to just remove the dog, or to remove the dog and pay the dog?
No, payment we can't. If we don't have any authority to force
him. Okay.
Now, you can ask a different question. What would it be if he took the law into his own hands? You know.
Oh, no. I forgot to restart it. Dove. It's on the here's work, right?
So, hopefully mine will work. I just want to say one thing. What I forgot to talk to you about, there's a major machlokas we showed him on this Rav Nosson. Many show him hold that the only time we force you to get rid of this animal or this ladder is only if there's a possibility that somebody might die. Because the pasuk says, Lotosin Dum. Dum is a reference to a life or death matter. What about other more minor case, you know, nizikin, like I have something in my possession that you'll trip on and you might break a leg, but it's not a life endangering situation. So maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow if I have
wait, the second